It was late December in 1967, and my high school sweetheart, Joe Santoni, was boarding a bus that would take him out of our lives forever. The tiny town of Sagamore, gateway to Cape Cod, and with a total population at the time of about 1,000 people, would never be the same. Our web of connections were so deeply entwined and interdependent that the loss of one life was like the loss of a vital artery or an essential limb.
For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are.
January 4th, 1968, at stopover base prior to departure. 5 a.m., reveille, formation and chow. 9 a.m., chaplain talk. 10 a.m., march off to guard. 11 a.m., chow. 12.05 p.m., meet Jim Hayes. It was great seeing someone from home. I felt good. A person feels funny when he knows no one. Thursday, January 11th. Met a guy from New Bedford. It's good to see someone from home to talk to. Friday, January 12th. I was in the chow line, thinking of writing Jim Sproul's wife a letter. Then, as I was about to enter the mess hall, who did I see? Jim Sproul's. Tears came to my eyes. God, how happy I was to see him. He has been here 8 months, and now the father of a boy. He is a great guy and has been through hell. He'll always be my friend.
Soldiers encounter soldiers along the way and forge bonds of love that bridge all differences and become indelibly forged in memory.
Sunday, January 14th. This morning, marching to chow, I heard Jim call my name. He's leaving tonight. I may never see him again, and I don't even know what unit he's going to. It's midday, and I'm sitting eating my chow in the field, sea rations, and participating in the oldest tradition in the Army, trading chow. Monday, January 15th. Funny thing, it's Monday morning here, but one of the guys has the Super Bowl on the radio. It makes us all feel a bit homesick.
Going about the mundane moments of the day, young men and women stationed thousands of miles from home have chance encounters with the familiar. Paths of friends cross in random and unexpected places. Trading rations with someone only just met. Homesick while listening to a Super Bowl game broadcast live during breakfast.
Later on Monday, January 15th, we entered a small village and were soon attacked. And by attacked, I mean we were surrounded by about 10 to 12 children. They kept yelling, "Chop, chop, food," and followed us as we walked through. It was weird. Me, armed with 2 grenades, 7 magazines of M16 ammo, and carrying a 200-round box of ammo, walking through a rubber plantation with a bunch of kids yelling at us for food. I got friendly with a little 8-year-old named Kwa. Sunday, January 28th. All the guys here are between 21 and 25 years old. About half are married, and another quarter are engaged.
For a very long time after the death of someone so young, there is almost an insurmountable grief over what might have been. In times of war, the loss of young men and women serving in the military is felt countless times over. Thousands, hundreds of thousands of times over. Then there's the loss of those caught in the theater of collateral damage. The innocent, whose only offense was a matter of geography. All of this vital life force, this energy, is taken out of the universe and joined in other universes by association. The trauma and confusion spreads across the entire planet in a common bond of pain and suffering.
Monday, February 12th. Word just came that E6 Sergeant Chandler was wounded and dusted off. He was the type of man that easily earned your respect and admiration. He's about 27, but has the combat experience and knowledge of a man of 40. He's been wounded about 6 times, but has never put in for a purple. He is like a father to me. He took over for E6 platoon leader and did a far better job. He always takes point and is the kind of man that gives you a secure feeling.
If you've ever seen the wonderful film Coco or are a devotee of the Mexican Day of the Dead, Dia de los Muertos, you appreciate the value of remembrance. According to the tradition of the holiday, as long as someone is still alive and remembers the loved one, the ancestor, their spirit remains awake in the afterworld. Photos and mementos placed on altars invoke connection and revive bonds of love.
Tuesday, February 13th. I located the place where we were the night Golan and Doc were killed, Bin Chan. Golan was my best friend. He had helped me as a father. We had talked about our futures. Doc was going to finish school and become an MD. He had 4 years of college behind him. I helped put them on a chopper.
So we create altars to ease our pain. Polished black granite inscribed with the names that attract, like bees to hives, thousands upon thousands of mourners who lay mementos at the shrine of their heart. A letter I left for Joe is among the thousands of items laid at the altar of the Vietnam War Memorial. Some of the other artifacts there include a can of Vermont maple syrup, a blue high heel, an 89-cent shot glass with the lyrics to a Billy Joel song tucked inside. Remember Charlie, remember Baker. They left their lives on every acre. Another was 7 love stamps inside a white envelope with the simple message, "Please write," scrawled across the front. A $1 bill inscribed, "A debt so long unpaid, and the beer I promised." Every artifact holds a story, a memory, and the love that keeps one's spirit awake in the afterworld.
Saturday, March 12th, a sad day. The worst day for me in the time I've been here. My best friend was killed last night. We came together. We were going on R&R together. We fought for our lives next to each other. Now he is no more. He was a mild-mannered guy. Everyone called him Hoss because he was built and had the personality of Hoss Cartwright. He was Pennsylvania Dutch and talked like one. Earl Althaus, that was his name. I'll remember him for the rest of my life. Of all the approximately 12 guys who came here with me, I'm the only one able to go to the field to fight. 2 were killed in the last 4 days.
Soldiers encounter other soldiers along the way and forge bonds of love that bridge all differences and become indelibly forged in memory of those left behind to hold the loss. It was after dinner on a late winter evening in 1987 when Laura Palmer called to ask if she could interview me for a book. That conversation and the book that came from it are the beginning of a story that went on for over 40 years. The book became the container of altars for Joe Santoni and so many others whose story is in that book. And these altars were constructed by complete strangers who fell in love and extended the life of a man, ended all too soon. Joanne Emmerich and her students from Hoxie High School in Kansas made Joe's story the center of their National History Day project. Years later, they invited me to attend and speak at the opening ceremony of the moving wall when it visited their county. A veteran of my era, Vietnam, who was part of the Color Guard, introduced himself, and he handed me his campaign ribbon, saying, "You earned this." I really felt as if I were a conduit, accepting a medal that linked two men, one standing, one gone. It was the fall of 1997, and the swamp maple outside the dining room window blazed golden in the evening moonlight. And another class of students called. They wanted to talk about their National History Day project. They're in middle school in California, and they adapt Joe's story to a script they titled "To Heal a Nation." They are unable to accept the death of a man only a few years older than they are. This group of students creates a marriage, a child, and a grandchild, through whom a bridge is built between mother and daughter, a silence broken, and healing begins. It's as if these children were telling the story of their own family lives in the aftermath of a loss to such an unpopular war. Similarly, in 2000 and then again in 2003, the senior class of Perry High School in Massillon, Ohio, sent binders of their letters, like 100 letters, with questions as they tried to understand an uncle or a grandfather changed forever by the experience of war. A few years ago, students of the theater and dance department at California Polytechnic State University, San Luis Obispo, present the Greek play Antigone, asking if they can use my letter in their play. They adapted this play to something they named Letters to Soldiers Lost. To end the play, the student cast in the character of Antigone read the letter I had left at the Washington Monument. Joe was studying to become an electrical engineer at Worcester Polytech. He hated it, and he dropped out to enlist in the Army. The things that excited him were history and global politics. He worried about Africa, and he knew by heart the names of its countries and their presidents. He expressed concern about the plight of the Palestinians in the aftermath of the Six-Day War. I always thought he would have been a great teacher, and that is, in fact, what he became in this book. So many shrines and so much love poured into a vessel of loss that brought alive over and over again the life of one man whose story touched and inspired hundreds of students all over America. I wonder about the others Joe met along the way and the lives they touched.
For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are.
Jim Hayes. Jim Sprowls. Earl Althouse. The guy from New Bedford. Sergeant Chandler. Golan. Doc, all the 21 to 25-year-olds and all the men married or engaged, Qua and the children of the rubber plantation.
To all of those lost to war, we set aside this day to remember, for all the names carved into stone on monuments everywhere, for wars fought here and around the world, each of them an altar of love and remembrance. This was a story of one man whose name is on one monument. He may have died in 1968, but he touched so many lives of those who read his story and absolutely of all who knew him. Multiply that by thousands of names etched on monuments and hearts of all these wars worldwide, we cannot begin to imagine what the world would be today if all these men, women, and children had lived to realize their fullest potential.
That's born, the star rises and sings to the universe who we are.
Our closing hymn is one more step, number 168 in your Gray's hymnals. Please rise as you are able. Reach out and take the hand of someone reaching out to you. You are holding in your hand someone's precious story, and they are holding yours. May your day be filled with the light and love of someone you won't forget and who won't forget you. Let us go out into this day of remembrance with this guidance from Thich Nhat Hanh. That there be peace in our hearts and peace in our homes, so that we may extend that energy out into the neighborhoods and the states and our countries, so that someday there can be peace in the world. Amen.